We tell stories to share the human experience.
No matter what form it takes.
Actor, photographer, theatre maker, musician, whoever is trying to be heard.
We can't stop telling stories. There's no end to them.
By telling stories, we connect to each other and create a sense of community.
This is an opportunity to share stories from a talented and diverse range of individuals, in the hope it provides inspiration and knowledge.
This is a podcast about Australian storytelling in all its forms, hosted by two Australians in the arts industry.
Welcome to the Act of Storytelling. Hi, everybody.
I'm Nick Kane.
And I'm Lauren Bailey.
And thanks for listening.
And welcome to September. Ta-da!
Starting to really heat up here in Sydney. How's it going in Melbourne?
Oh, it's beautiful. The first day of spring, I don't know what it was like in Sydney, but the first day of spring in Melbourne was completely glorious.
Oh, very nice.
And
it's so nice when it's like that.
Good to be alive. I mean, I like cold weather too, but I got to say, I'm glad spring is here.
There's only so much that you can do of the cold weather, and you have to get into the sunny times.
Well, I actually find it really interesting the way that weather affects sort of the kind of work that you do and how you tackle work.
Yes.
And your processes and everything, which I guess is something I have actually been thinking about a little bit.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm going to segue myself here right into
yeah.
What I've discovered about inspiration in the last month.
Oh. That's a big one. Let's talk about it.
Hello. Let's get it out there. You may recall, Nicholas Kane, that on the last podcast, I talked a little bit about how I was going to try to get up in the morning and do something that inspired me in order to sort of set my mojo for the day.
Yeah, totally. Get your mindset right.
And I have to be honest, I didn't do it every day because, let's face it, it's difficult. And that whole thing of it's difficult to find time for stuff you haven't done before. And that whole idea of implementing new habits and getting them to stick. Okay, so I had a bit of a play around. And the thing that seemed to work for me, particularly in terms of time, was I've been getting up in the morning and just drawing a little bit. Just
drawing?
Drawing, yes. Just,
so
you know,
not nothing, writing, drawing?
Not writing. And no masterpieces here. Please do not be looking for illustrative masterpieces. But I have been drawing a little bit in the mornings as a kind of way to clear my brain, similar to that idea from The Artist's Way, morning pages, but
morning
drawing
pages
instead of writing.
Yeah, and I love the idea of the drawing too, because it probably doesn't come as naturally to you as writing, I don't know, but it's just using another side of your brain, and it might just be a bit more subconscious than writing sometimes too.
You're exactly right. It is a different part of my brain, and I don't judge it in the way that I think I judge the written word.
Writing. Aha.
So that's been really good. But it's also made me realise, yes, it's great to be inspired. Yes, it does change my perspective and outlook for the day. But how do I then take that inspiration and put it into action?
Yeah, how have you done that?
And you want me to have an answer, don't you? Okay.
Well, I always want you to have an answer.
I just have
I'm using you as inspiration.
I think I just have the question so far, because it has been really interesting. It has helped me feel more inspired about life. But I've also discovered that I'm most likely to feel inspired about something when I'm doing something else.
Okay.
So I'll be thinking about, having all these great creative storytelling ideas while I'm doing another task. But then when I actually have the time to implement those ideas, I do a bit of self-sabotage.
Oh, yeah.
And
I know that feeling.
And I guess I'm used to that feeling more in terms of acting. But of course, at the moment, the storytelling challenge that I'm facing is the film that I've written that you're acting in next month. This month, later this month, and then I'm also acting in, and then I'm also directing.
Yes.
So when I get all inspired, I start doing the things I need to do for the day, which is what the inspiration was for. And while I'm doing them, I get all excited about all these ideas for how to direct a film, which I've not done before and is quite scary. And then I get home and I'm like, okay, right, now go. And I have, you know, I'm like, this is work that needs to be done. So I have eventually found my way to it. But it's still that thing of, why do we shy away from stuff?
It's hard to get moving sometimes too. And this leads perfectly into what I wanted to talk about for my month, which I've titled The Inertia of Doing, right? This idea of it is really hard to get Yeah, I know. It sounds random, right? But let me explain. But this idea that it's sometimes very hard to get started with anything. You know, in this podcast, listeners would be very aware in regards to my move to Sydney and then me in subsequent months saying, hey, I'm really going to try to get into more and more this month, and then coming back the next month and feeling like I hadn't necessarily.
Yeah, you've been really big on setting your intentions and making really clear goals and
And doing a lot, but doing a lot of procrastination in other areas rather than necessarily for my art and for my storytelling. But what I found this month was that things started to move. And when they did start to move, and I talk about things like I did get to a voice lesson, I went and saw some fantastic theatre, which was Mother and Sons at Ensemble Theatre there in Kirribilli, and then things started happening. So, you know, I actually went and did a voiceover today. Utopia went to air. I started to feel like I became... I started to feel like I was becoming a part of the Sydney sphere. Once you start going and meeting people in the artistic world, it becomes a lot easier than to do more of that and to be inspired to do more of that, which I think links beautifully into what you spoke about and what maybe your morning pages, quote unquote. I don't know whether I'm necessarily copyrighted to say that.
Yeah, I think maybe the Artist Way has trademarked that particular phrase.
Okay, we'll call yours
my morning doodles. Oh, that sounds
morning
wrong.
Please keep this in. Oh, fantastic. Trademark morning doodles.
Where were we?
That is yours. No one will take that on you, I'm sure.
It's actually interesting from what you just said, this idea of how you've got through the inertia of doing is by tapping into other people and into other people's creativity and storytelling.
Course.
And I think you're right. I had a meeting today with quite well-established director I know to talk to him about how he works and if he has any advice for me. Bam, as soon as that happened, that helped me actually get moving again. Yeah.
And it just takes those interactions. Like, I am actually going to bring this up too. We got a lovely communication from Sally McLean, who touched base via our website and just basically shouted out to say, you know, that she really loved what we were doing. I think it's worth shouting out here too, because it's such a lovely little project and we love passion and creativity, and this one's based all around it. Sally shared a little bit about her new project, which is a web series called Shakespeare Republic, which is based around her obsession with Shakespeare. And she's bringing a heap of great actors together, actually, for this web series. I'm just looking at a couple of them now. Alan Fletcher from Neighbours, Michaela Bannis, Upper Middle Bogan, of course, Rowena Hudson from Four-Eyed Guide to the Galaxy, Billy Smedley from Mrs. Fisher's Murders Mysteries, Ben Steele from Winners and Losers, and, of course, Sally as well. So it's a great little web series. So I thought we should give them a little plug. The web series is called Shakespeare Republic, and it takes little bite-sized chunks of some of the most famous monologues and sonnets and puts them in modern settings, which sounds kind of cool.
That sounds very cool. And I have to say, I completely loved Sally's email. So thank you so much for getting in touch, Sally. It's great to hear from other people who are out there who are creating things, which is what we are all about. So thanks. And we will post about the project because it sounds really exciting.
We, of course, love connecting with people in the community, and we've got one ready to go for you now, another great podcast with the lovely,
the very
vivacious,
lovely,
colourful Bethany Smith.
Very colourful Bethany Smith.
Well, Lauren Bailey, it seems like I get all the picturesque locations at the moment. I'm sitting here in a beautiful backyard in Enmore in Sydney. And
the smell of spring.
The smell of spring. Hello. Welcome, Bethany Smith.
I can almost smell the smell of spring over Skype. Is that weird? It just looks like you guys, it's so sunny and lovely at your end.
Oh, it's so lovely.
It is. It's beautiful. The sun is shining and I'm being looked after too.
Yeah, what is that you're drinking there, Nick?
It's a water infusion, so it's got like cucumber, lemon, orange and parsley.
Yes. And then a tea as well.
What, peppermint tea?
A peppermint tea, yes.
I'm all about the refreshments.
It's getting looked after.
It's good to know someone's looking after you, Nick.
Totally.
And why are we in this particular backyard today?
Why are we here? Because this is where the magic is created, I guess. I use this alleyway in the back of my house. It almost looks like this beautiful spring jungle at the moment. I need to do a bit of gardening. But I put my artworks up there and I kind of scratch at them. I slash paint onto them and then draw. And then, and I use the back alleyway just behind to kind of lay my canvases up against the wall and create a mess. A beautiful
Fantastic.
Mess.
Fantastic. It's a really lovely space. Like, time would just pass in this space very quickly.
Definitely. Yeah, definitely. And I like to think that, because, you know, not all that paint is from me. No. So I like to think, you know, I can't be like, that was me. Because I like to think that, you know, before my time here, because I only got here in February, end of February, that other people have been using the same space.
Space for the same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if you're the owner of the house, it wasn't all your paint, obviously.
No, of
it was other
course
people's
not.
Paint.
Yeah.
Of course.
So that wall tells a story. That tells a very amazing and more story.
It does.
Well, speaking of stories, shall we get you to read your story for us, Bethany?
Oh, yes, certainly. Okay, so I'm an artist who creates visual representations of music in live music venues around the world. My events showcase the creative process of art and are a part of my art movement called Tune Art, which provides a free platform for artists to exhibit and promote their art in these venues. I have a passion for storytelling, just like you guys, and have spent time traveling through Central America and Eastern Europe writing poetry on people's arms, inspired by this story and any two words they gave me, and that has got me into many strange situations. Aside from teaching, because I'm a teacher, I run a non-profit organisation called Say Thanks, which utilises the work of creatives to do good things in the community, such as like painting homeless shelters, and we do that all around the world, particularly London. I love London. And using art to develop a social consciousness. I grew up in Cat Eye National Park along the Hawkesbury River in New South Wales and later moved to the Hunter Valley. I started teaching at ACU in Sydney, but I find that most of my creative inspiration comes from immersion in nature as a child and the incredible people I meet travelling. My art is featuring in a new Australian film called What Time Is My Heart, and where I met Lauren. And I'm also currently working with an electronic music producer called Von Dupe on a sensory installation for the Other Art Fair, which is coming up in a few weeks. And we'll also be transforming children's playgrounds into interactive installations of light and sound to enlighten and empower Sydney audiences all across Sydney.
Wow. Fantastic. Thank you so much for sharing your story with us, Bethany. And it's fair to say that that summary was only a bite-sized portion of what seems like the amazing life you've led so far. But we'll do our best to explore as much as we can today. So let's start off by learning a little bit more about who Bethany Smith is, air quotes, and your early influences. Can you tell us a little about the sights and sounds you were immersed in growing up on the beautiful Hawkesbury River?
Kind of similar to some of the sounds that we are hearing now, actually. I was very blessed. I have an incredible family. And, yeah, we grew up kind of on this cliff face. And I spent my time, we had this big German shepherd that used to, like, just look after me and my siblings, my older siblings. And we used to, like, literally, my brother used to put a helmet on my head and, like, abseil me off the cliff. And this German shepherd used to bark so my parents would know that something deviant is going on. But I literally grew up in nature, riding around nature, listening to birds singing all the time, making mud patties, splashing that everywhere. And literally my mum thought I was autistic when I was young, because I used to just draw all the time. Like I just loved it.
Just love drawing, yeah.
Yeah, I was just so in the zone. I was so content at being by myself and in creating, like, everything. Like even cards that I give my friends, I have to make that card. Like,
it can't be purchased.
No, of course not. No, of course not. I've always been hands on deck, and I guess that's the sort of sounds that I was immersed in as a child.
And you did mention your parents there really quickly.
Yeah.
Either of them creative or?
No. Not at all. My dad is very scientific. He's actually a counsellor. He's a beautiful man. And my mum, my mum's a early childhood teacher. So I guess she does create some beautiful creative things with her children. I definitely got the poetry influence from her, because we used to have empty tissue boxes and I learned how to write and read at a very young age. because she's a school teacher, so obviously, and she used to have this empty tissue box out the front of my door, and I'd have one out the front of her door, and I used to write poems to her, and then she would reply and put it in my little tissue box, and that's what we'd write to each other. I used to be like, are you mad at me today? Tick the box, yes or no. So she loved it.
Great.
So I guess I get that from my parents, but no, I don't. They're not particularly creative at all. Like, and my brother and sister, no, I'm the black sheep of the family, I guess.
I'm sure they're supportive of you.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah.
And so you mentioned that the other half of your creative inspiration comes from the incredible people you've met. Do you think that although they weren't necessarily creative, your parents inspired you in that regard? Like if your dad was a counsellor, that idea of reaching out?
Oh, definitely, definitely. I've actually never thought of it like that. But yeah, because my dad is so, he often becomes so engrossed in people's stories because he wants to help people. And because my mum, like she would always create these wonderful creative instances for me, give me loads of paints and pencils to work with constantly. And she would constantly get me outside in nature. So I guess, yeah, that it does come from them because they put me in certain situations or environments that would that it were conducive for that sort of expression.
And why specifically painting and drawing as a starting point? And what was the reason? Was it just because it was there and it was easy to access, or was?
Yeah, maybe. I think just because for some reason I get lost in a totally other zone, and I didn't really have any other toys or anything, to be honest. I didn't have any distractions when I was young, and maybe that was why. But I find it quite cathartic, this kind of like the motion of like drawing and painting. Like I get in my own zone.
Mm.
So I guess that's, I guess I really never thought about that.
Yeah.
Why that medium of art and not like photography or these other things.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. And then, of course, you moved... as you grew up, you moved to Sydney and started to develop your education. And in 2010, you completed a fine art and education degree at ACU.
Yeah.
And after you graduated, you made a pretty bold decision to move to London.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Oh, that was...
You did end up at the Jubilee Primary School,
if
I remember correctly.
Yeah.
And it was a challenging and disadvantaged school is what I hear about.
Oh,
right?
It was... disadvantage is definitely a word that you could... But, you know, it was incredible. It was definitely an incredible experience. Look, these children come from really hard backgrounds. You know, I could tell you stories about these children, their parents. You know, like one of the children had seen, and he was in my class, he was 10 years old, and he'd seen his mother stabbed to death at a very young age.
Wow.
Stepfather in jail and living with his grandmother who was a junkie. Like, and I had to teach these kids, and I was shoved into this place, and no one wanted to teach at this school. And I had no resources. I was literally had a flip chart, and I was like teaching them to a flip chart.
Yeah.
Basically, like, these kids would spit at me, they would, like, run out of the classroom, throw chairs at me, have tantrums. But after a while, I just realised, like, many tears later, I stuck it out with them, and I realised I kind of threw the curriculum out the window. Like, these kids, I did. And I just, you know, I was like, you know, I'm just going to share a piece of me. And I would perform poetry for them.
Yeah.
And I'd get up every morning and I'd share that. And then I got them to love vocabulary. Even though they couldn't spell, I was like, don't worry about the spelling. Like, just express how you feel. Yeah. And through that, I guess the power of poetry, really. Yeah. They learnt to write sentences, and from sentences they learnt to write paragraphs, and from paragraphs they wrote stories, and then from these stories they were writing better than the top English class, you know?
Yeah.
I would sometimes read the sentences and the stories to my boyfriend at the time, and he was like completely moved by the way that they would describe this. Like, an example was once this little child, Muhammad, in my class, he said it felt like a pig being brought in to slaughter. And I was like, where does that come from?
Come
and then
from.
He ended up telling me this story about, like, his family and how he felt like his dad got really angry at him at one point. And, and then he saw this documentary about pigs being slaughtered, and he kind of made that connection. And I was like, you are 10 years old.
What a connection to make.
And
isn't that amazing, this idea that when we take away the need for kids to so they don't have to worry about rules but just focus on expressing themselves, that they can suddenly achieve so much because they're not worried about getting it right or exactly. doing what's perceived to be correct.
Because you know what it is? It's all, and this is, I'm all about this, empowering someone. When you empower someone, magic happens. Mm. It really does. And if you, with those children, we had all these rules, these structures that they had to write within. Like, they're not going to write. Like, when you've got rules, that's not, you're not going to express yourself through that sort of angle. You want to be able to take vocabulary and use it as your own.
Yeah.
So I empowered them to be like, no, and like even the hard things that you've experienced in your life, express them.
Yeah.
And so instead of hiding them from people, so use that as a mode of expression and empowerment, and then they flourish.
Yeah, like, there's a catharsis in that, isn't there, of sharing? Especially that, and it sounds like that was what was happening, especially at this school.
Yeah.
You know, they were able to express themselves in a way that they'd never expressed themselves.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Like, these guys had a mark of 37% combined maths and English, and by the end of the year, it was, I believe it was 79%.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a big jump.
Yeah, that was huge. What, like, just in 1 year, and it was a painful year. was...
How did that affect your decisions for, did that change your idea of what you wanted to do next? Do you feel like that altered your course a bit?
Oh, of course. Because of that, I decided... that I didn't want to be a full-time teacher anymore. I then left and I went traveling. My visa was up in London and I went traveling through Central America, and I came up with this idea of, like, because I just started writing poetry on my arm. I then started meeting people and I got them to give me two words, any two words they wanted, and share a story with me. And I started writing poetry on their arms, and then I'd take a photo of it and kind of compiled, like, my WordPress of all this and documented stories over my time. And it seems like such a, like, it seems a very odd thing, but it was really beautiful moments that I shared with people. Like, and they got really excited about sharing their story, and it became their poem. You know, it wasn't about what I wrote. I just put the words together, but they, it was all purely inspired by their story. And I would say that to them. It was, yeah, it was incredible. Fantastic.
And there is, you said, a WordPress out there. So we'll share that with our listeners as well. So they can have a look, because it's quite amazing just to be able to flick through.
Yeah.
And we might ask you a couple of your favourites as well, if that's okay.
I totally can.
Some of that poetry is, I was quite, because I was having a flick through, and the two word principle. So were you just chatting to them about their story, and then, and because some of it is, it's really complex poetry.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like roses are red sort of.
No, it's not.
And you're like, no. So I'd be really, you know, really interested in how you connect all that.
Yeah, so any two words that they gave me, and I would often challenge them to give me difficult words or words out of the ordinary, because the amount of poems that I wrote about love and freedom, like, and their story. But once I got anti-disestablishmentarianism.
Wow.
And gynecea, which is the genitals of a flower.
Wow.
And I made a beautiful poem. I was so proud of it. I talked about, because he ended up sharing this story about how his relationship was breaking down with his girlfriend.
Yeah.
So I talked about how anti-disestablishmentarianism was a representation of, like, the breaking down of state and church, of their relationship. Like, it was breaking down. And then I said, how about we, like, it's like reproduce and make our love flourish through, like the gynecea of a flower, and bring it to harvest or something. I forget what it was, but I was like so proud of that. I was like, yep, nailed that one. Nailed it.
Fantastic. The arm poetry and things like that is a great example of what you talk about in some of your basic creative principles that you have. And I'm going to quote you here, if that's okay.
That's right.
On your website, you say, "I've always believed art has a way of generating a sense of community.
Oh, it does.
I base all of what I create around this principle."
Mm.
So, leaving projects aside, can you talk a little bit more about that concept?
Yeah, okay. So that's again why I left teaching full time, because I just wanted to use my art for greater good. And this is another thing that kind of comes to my parents, I guess. Art has a way of bringing people together. Like, it does. With my art events, where we create live visual representations of music in live music venues, and, you know, artists get to promote their work for free and perform and sell their works commission free. But this is about when you get people in a certain room and they're seeing someone create, they kind of get lost in that zone and that magic. And it brings people together, because suddenly they become critics, or they even become artists themselves. I invite them up to come paint. I feel like it develops this incredible sense of community. Like, even in a sense where you can use art to do good things for your community. So painting homeless shelters, right? I created this, I did this thing in London, and it's the image of a homeless man, and he's holding a stick saying, "I'm homeless, not heartless, thanks for caring." And it's, and in his heart, he's got like a bleeding heart. And I painted that at the front of the homeless shelter. And that, because he feeds these people 24/7, no funding from the government, homeless people. And I found there was this one homeless lady came up to me, and she was just like, "Wow, thank you so much." And I had this moment like, wow, like my art really can help the community as much as it can sort of develop a sense of community. So, yeah.
And you were just, you're flicking through your book here. Have you got an example of?
That's this one.
Yeah. Excellent. And we will take a picture of that.
Really beautiful. Yeah. I've actually got a video of, his name's Mr. Mitchell that runs the place, and he actually serenaded me. He's like this Jamaican man, and he's so beautiful. And because I was actually painting the Dog Star pub, and I got paid to do that down the road, and then he walked past, he's like, "Oh," he's like, "I'd love you to paint my shop." And then I was like, "Yeah, sure." And we're running down like what the cost and everything, and I said, "What do you want painted?" And he said, "A homeless man." And I was like, "Oh, that's strange. Why would you like a homeless man?" He's like, "Oh, because I feed homeless people 24/7 and I was like, "I'm not, you're not going to pay me to do this. I'll do this for free." Yeah. I even did a fundraiser at my New Year's Eve exhibition at the Dogster.
Yeah,
and I raised money just so I could pay for most of the paints. And then I just went at like 3 a.m. in the morning. It was freezing cold in London. I had to get up at 3 a.m. because it's the only time it was shut to paint this jerk chicken place. Like, oh, it was. In fact, like you can see the water ripples because it was snowing on the image. Yeah.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
Which has kind of got a nice serendipity to it. Is that the word I'm looking for? When you think about the fact that homeless people are out there sleeping in that weather.
Yes, he was open on Christmas Day feeding homeless people. Like where everywhere else was shut. Like. And he's like a beacon of light. He's got this massive smile. You could not want to do anything for this guy. Yeah, right. Hey, he's just so happy and go lucky. And I was just like, you have got this energy that I just want to be a part of.
So let's focus in specifically on this art movement that you created in 2013 called Tune Art, which you just touched on. And it involves deinstitutionalizing the use of gallery spaces and instead bringing exhibitions to live music venues.
Yes.
And, I mean, Nick and I are huge fans of this idea. Yeah. It's cross-disciplinary art, co-creation, collaboration, where you create visual representations of music while it's being performed. Can you sort of step us through how an event would run?
For example, I'll talk about the one that we did in London. We did a creativity festival. We had 7 live artists. I was one up above a bar up the top, and it was like this, had this massive wall that you can paint and draw on. There was also another little room where we had someone drawing where people could come in and add their piece to that drawing. So the idea was that anyone can draw and that they're supposed to contribute to this kind of expressing themselves. And then we have other artists that are just either graphic designers or illustrators just kind of scattered amongst the crowd, like as if like someone's might be eating dinner and they're just sitting there drawing. And there was another guy, we had like a live jazz band, and he was there and he creates only within that song. So the song goes for 3 minutes. He just does this sort of thing with a paintbrush and some ink, and he creates what he sees, like that moment of when they're holding that trumpet, like, and then he stops at the end of it. So what we have is we have all of these artists creating visual representations of what's happening around them. And I find that really important. Like even when I have an audience member come up and I have a conversation with me, they have a conversation with me about, and I usually wear a hat. I always have like these bowler hats that I wear. And they start talking about things that, or objects that are sentimental to them. And then I'll suddenly just add it to the artwork.
Yeah.
And I get them to add it to the artwork and I get them to draw. And they start off going, "Oh no, I can't do it. I can't do it." I'm like, "No, try." Like, and by the end of it, there was this one guy at the beginning. He's like, "Oh, really tentative about it." And then I remember the whole event had gone by and I came back in like in an hour and he was like, he was there like drawing, like sneaking. He's like totally addicted to it. And he's like, oh my God. He's like, this is amazing. He's like, I want to quit my job. And I was like, oh wow. And I had that moment. I was like, wow, this is what creativity does for people. So that's what we do. We kind of, we set up different musical performances in that space and we get different artists to kind of vibe off it. And we vibe off each other and the audience and we get them to incorporate their piece to it. But the beauty of it is that it's a way to get street artists into venues and not be charged, because you get charged like 40 to even like 60% of your artwork proceeds go to a gallery. So using live music venues where you've already got an audience and you've already got people that are coming there for the music and for the artists, and the artists are promoting themselves, it's for a free platform. I just thought it was a brilliant idea.
Yeah.
And I don't really know how I came up to it, to be honest.
But you did.
I did.
And we're thankful for it. And this idea of de-institutionalizing gallery spaces, it sounds like that's the benefit, is, you know, the profits at least are not going out the window. New audiences are seeing your work. And I really love this idea of, this, as we said, cross-disciplinary kind of style, where it's almost like all the inspiration is coming at you so quickly. And you're then just converting that into images or music in that you know, forum. It's quite a beautiful...
Yeah, exactly.
What are the audience's feedback generally when you do
this? Awesome. I had this little... I took my GoPro and we had this GoPro Grow Passion box and we got people... we actually filmed people with what they thought about what was happening with Tune Art, because we thought it was really important to get feedback. And they were so excited about it. And, like, people in London are so dynamic. Like, we've got the best characters, so we've got the best footage of these people being like, like, you know, we love, they're coming in here and creating art. I never thought I had this, like, sort of creative flair, but you've inspired me. Like, you know, but I was like,
fantastic.
So you perform, you have Tune Art events in Australia as well. It's not just while you were overseas.
I started here before, I started at Foundry 616, actually. I just, how it all started was I literally just rocked up with, you see those pieces of paper there, the cardboard. I literally just walked up at venues and just kind of stuck it on the wall and started drawing. And people were like, what's this girl doing? But they all like loved it. And they're like, oh, you, can you come back? We'll pay you.
Do you have preconceived notions of what you're going to draw when you go in, or the stories you're creating, it's just what comes to you on the spot?
At first I started creating, like I'd research the musician that was performing and I'd kind of get a base idea, because, you know, drawings take so long to do. So I would create something kind of just basic and then I'd take that and then I'd use the influence of the music and the audience to then kind of take that to a whole nother level. And so by the time it was finished, I had not conceived that it would look anything like how it did. So it was just... Yeah, I guess for my own practice as well.
Exciting.
It was surprising. Yeah, and to see what people really love and enjoy. You know, that was the best. And I got to hear so many stories. The whole night I just end up connecting with people on totally amazing levels just by hearing about their life as well, which I find really important. Because I think all artists should do that. You shouldn't be a recluse. You should go out there and hear what people have to say. You know what I mean?
How many people that you meet are... other artists that get inspired by your work?
Yeah, a lot. And a lot of people that are like, oh, I don't really have my stuff out there. And I encourage them to come along. Because it's, like I said, it's completely free. Like, just come and just have like a taster. Come and experience it. Bring your drawings. Because you'll find that a lot of people find what you do or any form of expression really amazing. A lot of people aren't confident to do this.
Yeah, and there's no... what I love about that too is artists, there's no expectation.
No,
you can turn up and whatever you want to do is right.
And there's no theme. You know, like I even get really frustrated, you know, in year 12 how they have like Art Express, you know, even kids that get really amazing marks, like Art Express only take in a certain theme, right? But this is not like this. Like, you know, these events are like, well, if you're an artist, you express yourself, come along, you know what I mean?
And no style is right. No, you know, style is wrong.
Yeah.
And so artists can sell their work at the end of the event.
Yes. Yes, they can. Or throughout the night, they can network, they can do whatever they want. Like, I'm not about taking money from artists. Like, if anything, I just want to promote what they do. You know what I mean? And I just think, I think we've lost that with galleries. And I know they have to, you know, everyone has to make money somehow, but really that's not what we did it in the first place. Like, do you really think like most artists create art for money? Like, gee, if you become an artist to make money, then
Everyone seems to say that.
Yeah,
it's not the case. So all of these amazing projects are really around collaboration and community, and especially in this next project that we're about to talk about, which is your non-profit organisation, Say Thanks, which utilises the work of creatives to do really, really great things in the community.
Yeah.
It's also sponsored by tolearn.com.au, which is super exciting.
Which is like a HR company.
Yeah, which we'll talk about as well. But I've got heaps of questions. The most important one for listeners could be how you went about this. Starting a not-for-profit organisation off the ground is a lot of work. So amongst everything else that you're doing, you know, it's a massive thing. And you're doing a great thing, both tackling homelessness and allowing artists to offer assistance and get their work out there. So.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm tired even just saying that. That seems like a massive process. How did you go about it?
To be honest, it was kind of like when I left London, I had a little broken heart. And so I had this, I was going through this sort of purging of my own emotional development, I guess.
Yeah.
And I came back to Australia and I was like, you know what? I've always loved doing things for other people. Mm. Like even like, you know, I love entertaining. Like I'm just one of those people. I just love doing that.
And as I sip on my tea.
Exactly. Yes. And, you know, avocado ice cream that we're going to have after this.
Stop it.
But I came back and I was like, you know what, I am genuinely so happy when I'm either hearing other people's stories or I'm doing stuff for other people. And it's this most simple thing, it's the most rewarding thing that you can do. I guess that is the sort of teacher that comes out of me in that sense. But I just decided to do this and I looked into it, I researched, and it's actually quite easy to start a non-profit, like to do all the paperwork and that kind of stuff. And then it's just basically having the balls to just kind of go out and create your projects, get funding for the projects, and get in touch with the right people. Like I met up with Big Issue and they gave me a lot of information and volunteered for them. And I was like, I came up, I've always had this, I love homeless people. I don't know what it is. I just suck to their stories. And I find, so I've always had that passion for that sort of angle. So I use the work of creatives to do good things in the community, and you often find so many creatives will happily sacrifice their time and their energies in order to do things for other people. So I just started that. But it does take up a lot of my time. But when you work, like, you get tired. I don't see this as work.
Yeah.
So I don't get tired.
That's a common theme that we hear. When something, a passion like this, which you obviously have a passion for, you know, helping the community.
Yeah.
It's not work. You know, you don't get tired from it. Yeah. So it's really good. But I think at the initial stages, it sounds like a lot of meeting and greeting, a lot of sharing your idea with people.
And a lot of people like turn it down too. Like I have this one idea I've just wanted. This is like my ultimate goal. So I want to work with homeless people, but there's a lot of rules in place to be able to do this. So it's not as easy as what it is. Like I often just meet people and I just kind of do it my own way. But, you know, there are certain things in place because there's a lot of mental illness involved. So for your own safety, you have to be careful. Yep. I had this project where I want to create, sit down, hear stories of homeless people, write poetry with them, and hear about their stories, then have an event where they get to share their stories. And I'll do visual representations of their stories as well, and then they can sell it to raise money for themselves.
That sounds brilliant.
But I want them to get up. Yeah, but I want them to get up. The whole point of it is not about being like, oh, wow, look at these artworks or whatever about their story.
Yeah.
I want to get them to share their story, their whole life. You know, no one actually pays attention to them. Like they have people walk past every single day. So the one thing they want is to hear people to hear their story and get some acknowledgement. And that is empowering, you know. So I just want to have that sort of event where that would happen for them. And it's been one of my things I wanted to do for years. And
maybe we should see if we can find a way to make it happen.
Yeah.
Because it is quite a simple task. It really is. And a lot of people have said to me, oh, I don't know about like writing poetry with homeless people. I don't know if they'd really be into that. And I've gone, you know what? I've had the most juvenile, sort of mean, horrible people around the world that I have met, right? And I have transform them in a space of 5 minutes into loving poetry and writing on their arm. Like, I've got incredible stories. So if I can do it for them, I'm sure homeless people would love to have that sort of expression and their story heard.
At least give them the opportunity, right?
Yeah, and I've spoken to so many around the world and they love that. Like, I've even, this guy called Demir in Circular Quay one night, and we actually renamed each other because he was telling me about his life and it was how horrible it was. And I was like, well, how about, you know, our lives are horrible. Okay, yep. So how about we just rename ourselves? And I renamed him Hope so that he could never lose hope. And he renamed me. He didn't know what to name me. He's like, oh, I don't know, like flower. And I was like, oh, what flower? And he looked up on the top of, it's like this building and it kind of had like this sort of flower. He's like, oh, it kind of looks like it's from the desert. So he's like, oh, I'll rename you Desert Flower. And I was like, oh, okay, that's lovely. And he's like, oh, yeah, because you blossom from the dust. And I was like, oh, isn't that the most poetic thing I've ever heard in my life? This man knows me better than anyone. Yeah. I was like, I had this moment. I was like melting. And I was like, oh, wow. And I think he was from Iran or somewhere and he just came on a boat. And he was just sitting there, just staring off into the distance. And I could not walk past him. I just kind of sat next to him. I didn't even know he was homeless when I first saw him. And, I have so many stories like that. I just kind of talk to people, especially if someone looks sad and lonely. How do people walk past them, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I really don't understand that. To me, I just can't comprehend that at all. Like, how can you walk past someone even that's crying? And I've seen it so often happen, particularly in London, because there's a lot of emotional people in London. But a lot of people are just really upset or distraught and people just walk on by.
In an online bio of yours, you described yourself, your motivation and inspiration in life as being led by colour.
Yeah.
Can you talk about what you mean when you say this?
Well, look at my jacket.
Yes. Yes.
I can only see one shoulder.
Oh. Well, the whole thing's that colourful.
To be honest, I say, here's the arty me coming out, but colours represent feelings for me in the very simplest form, and I think that comes from where I grew up, like especially like nature itself. Colour is an expression of how we feel, and we look at things and then we feel certain ways. When we see colours, like bright colours, we suddenly feel happiness, you know. But not only that, that quote itself, it was actually referring to, I see colour in people's personalities. Like, I have this thing, whenever you meet someone, you take a little bit of their personality, a little piece, whether it's something you admire about them, whether it's something that you wish you could be more like. But we take that piece and it makes us a better person. So that's why I meet so many people and I have conversations with randoms in the street. I'm renowned with my friends to just be like, but Bethany, she always attracts all these strange people. But I just love it because when I hear a story, it's somehow kind of like, you know, same with you guys. It excites me.
Yeah.
And then I kind of want to, I don't know, express that somehow or get them to express themselves more because I know it's incredibly empowering when you can do that. So I guess in terms of leading a life by colour, it's colour in other people's, seeing the colour in other people's personalities and what makes them so beautiful. Everyone's an artwork.
Totally. And being curious for that colour too, because it sounds like, you know, you've just returned from Copenhagen.
Yeah.
So you're now back, obviously, after a period of time over there. But it seems like that wanderlust idea is really important in adding to the tapestry of the colours for you as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And travelling around, you get, and being immersed in culture is one of the best ways to learn and develop as an artist. And Copenhagen is so creative. Like,
was it?
Yeah. Copenhagen is just like this hub of creativity. Like, there's even on the street, and they're really supportive of it. On the street, there was this one, and it was actually a child painted. It's kind of like this street art thing, and it's saying, it's like questions like, why are there homeless people on the street? And they actually left it there, and it's really beautiful. And it's just kind of like, why are there homeless people on the street? But Copenhagen is incredibly creative. All cold countries are extremely creative, I guess, because they're indoors a lot. Whereas we were like, oh, the sun's out, let's go to the beach, get to tan, la-di-da. So we don't, I guess maybe, I can't say that about everyone, but we don't strive for, that's the wrong word. I guess we're just not in deep, dark places, cold places where we want to create more.
So having been so busy on so many fronts over the years, when you look back at your journey so far, Would you say you're proud of what you've achieved?
Oh, I'm so proud. Actually, you know, I look back and I think, you know, I could have even done a little bit more. And like, yeah,
where
no,
would you have fitted that in? Is yeah, my question.
Yeah. I was like,
yeah, I do look at what you've achieved and think, well, come on, bit lazy.
So, you know what? I honestly do feel like I was like, sometimes, like, even in Copenhagen, I was like, there's so many more projects. I even forget, actually, because I toured with Luke Kincannon through the Netherlands. Oh, that was so much fun.
Yeah,
through the
like
Netherlands,
fun.
Yeah. Working with curated, like, who runs events, Joop. His name's Joop. How cool is that name?
Joop.
Joop. yeah, who I actually met him in Sydney one night and read a poem on him. Yeah, yeah. So that's how I knew him. And then he remembered me and then he was like, hey, do you want to come on tour with him? And I was like, yeah, sure. So it kind of works out well, I guess, for networking as well. But I don't know. There's just so many, I guess because I've got so many other projects that I still want to achieve, that I still feel like, oh, you know, I could have done that last year or I could have done that at the side of this. But then I guess maybe I would have burned out.
Yeah. You've got to leave space, don't
you,
as well?
I've got to breathe sometimes.
Got to breathe.
And you have got a couple of super exciting projects on the go for you at the moment.
Yeah, yeah. I want to take this whole visual representations of music to a whole nother level.
Yeah, well, first, let's talk about an amazing, super exciting new project, which is that your artwork is featuring in a new Screen Australia-funded film.
Yeah.
Which is What Time Is My Heart, where I believe is where you met Lauren.
Yeah, the lovely Lauren. yes.
It must be a bit of a joy to see your work featured in that way.
Oh, definitely. And particularly because, you know, I am a street artist and you won't find that much on me if you Google me, apart from if you enter my website. But it's like, so the fact that they kind of, it's really encouraging the support that you get for an artist that isn't particularly well known in Sydney.
Yep.
Like I'm a bit more well known overseas. But yeah, and it's just exciting just to have, because I got to, I read the script for that and I actually created artworks based on the personalities of that script.
Wow.
And yeah, so it was very inspirational, I guess.
Yeah.
It took my art to a whole nother level. And then I created a poetry that I wrote based on those artworks as well. So it kind of pushed me, which is what I'm doing next as I'm creating poetry and artworks and placing them into street, which is... Don't want to give that away too much.
Not giving away too
Don't
much.
Don't want to give away too
much. And it was quite inspiring being on the set of What Time Is My Heart, because one of the locations has your artworks that you created for the set displayed throughout.
Mm.
Have I got that right?
Yeah, it definitely was. And they even took photos of it and sent it to me, which is great. Just to see that sort of support, I guess, for Australian artists. And just... To be realised within a different medium, within film, you know?
Yeah.
I think that's really important.
Yeah. Well, I found it really great having met you and then arriving on set and being like, oh. Uh-huh. And the more time I spent on set realising your presence around it, like, it was really beautiful.
Oh, that's lovely.
And that's only one project. There's another project that you've got going on at the moment, which is with, as you said, local producer Fondue.
Yeah.
For an installation which is happening at the Other Art Fair, which... looks really cool.
Yeah.
Like, I did a bit of research on this, and it's an exciting event. It's happening 10th to the 13th of September for anyone that wants to head along. And it's happening in Central Park in Chippendale, which is in Sydney.
Yep.
So, just to give a quick background of the Other Art Fair, it's an artist-led fair featuring a heap of amazing artists.
Yeah.
And it's showcasing their wares to the public, right?
Yeah.
And can you give us a little insight about what you're planning, or is it all a little bit... undercover for now.
Oh, I think I'll get in trouble if I like to.
That's okay.
But it's okay. So it's I can go all generic on you.
Go all generic.
It's a visual and sensory experience. We seek to empower and enlighten the audience, and it's I can't. It's so hard to like explain something without like giving it away.
You just have to get along.
Yeah,
to the
you
other
just have to
there.
Go
well,
to the other
we'll
out there.
Have
and
to
you just have to
see.
Experience it. Yeah, definitely. I can tell you about the other one we're doing, though. We're transforming children's playgrounds into visual stimulations, installations of light, sound, and interactive sort of an interactive environment.
Wow.
So, yeah, and whilst performing his music and other music. So, yeah.
Wow. And where is this going to be?
Several different places. Want to do it in playgrounds across Sydney.
Great.
So we definitely, the first one we want to do is at Marrickville, actually, just around the corner.
Because
there's a massive spaceship. It's like this spaceship little thing inside the playground. So imagine like someone playing in there and it lit up with like lights and like having visuals projected on like the...
I'm already there.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
I love that.
So with all of these amazing projects that you're involved in, are there any themes or anything that occurs to you as you work, strong beliefs surrounding the idea of what the key to good storytelling is?
Okay. The key to good storytelling is living, first of all. You've got to live.
Yeah.
You've got to take risks. You've got to take chances. And then when you achieve something that you take a risk of, like the storytelling is easy because you're so passionate about it. It's like, and it's an achievement, you know what I mean? So, and storytelling is so important. You need to share your story whether you think you can or not, because at the end of the day, you have that power of influence. And I guess that comes back to me being a teacher. I think that's our responsibility, is to share our stories so that we can create a community consciousness. You know what I mean?
That's fantastic. And I was just wanting to come off the back of that and say, is there a particular storyteller who you feel does that incredibly well?
Storyteller
that you're inspired by, that you think is just the epitome of that storytelling idea?
Actually, there is a poet, Luca Lesson. He's actually incredible. He's very inspirational. And
a friend of ours in Melbourne, the wonderful Jennifer Innes, actually hosted a poetry slam event.
We both went, oh!
Sorry, I just so excited.
Yeah, no, he's great. I actually worked with him. We're trying to get to drop, because they do it in Europe, we're trying to get a helicopter to drop 10,000 poems from the sky. And I looked into all of it, and it is possible. And the council was actually quite supportive of it. It's just, and I'd have to get permission from the CASA? Aviation, yeah, something like
Authority
that.
Authority or something.
But they said they'd be all for it, but it'd be getting big sponsors to be able to pay for it. But yeah, that's another project I've got burning. But he's incredibly inspirational, and he just has that way with people that he just people just jump on board whatever he does. Like he has a street team that like works for him and does for him, just does stuff for him because they just believe in his passion.
He's amazing.
So do you have any advice of your own for visual artists or poets, for that matter, who are starting out in the industry? Or starting out in life, I should say. That seems more on topic.
First of all, I would say connect with other artists and get your stuff out there. But it's actually a lot easier than you think, because I would rock up to a venue, a music venue. I was like, I'm going to create my own gallery spaces, and I would just take my art. But people, not once have I been turned down anywhere around the world. And I even went to some high profile venues in London, and I never got turned down. So my advice would be to connect with people, and also, I guess, share stories to develop that consciousness and to develop that sort of empowering abilities that can make you a stronger artist. But there are different ways to exhibit and to showcase what you do, so look into them. It's not just that the gallery it's kind of daunting,
which also brings us back to something you said earlier about having the balls to do something.
And I've got big
and
balls.
All of those things do seem to require overcoming, I guess, a lot of artists can be, or people can be, held back by personal fears. Do you have any advice on how to overcome that to be able to share stories and connect to
what's
people?
The point? What does that give you? That fear, what does that bring you? So I often, my dad often taught me this technique where you disassociate it with who you are, so you externalize it. So if you have a fear, almost like, and give it a name, Mr. Fear, or Mr. I don't want to do this, and speak to it today I'm not going to allow you to impede upon what I want to do and what I want to achieve. And you almost, by having that dialogue and that conversation with that fear, you start to have power over it. And I think it's really important, because fear itself, it brings you nothing. It really does. So think about when you're old and you're going to look back on everything you do, and you didn't get to challenge, you didn't get to achieve that thing that you wanted to do and you didn't challenge yourself, then you're just going to be a real sad sap, aren't you?
Totally.
Exactly. And you just don't want to have that moment. I live my life by being like, you know what, just get out there and do it. And I feel like I haven't done enough. So I don't know how other people feel, but, you know. Come on, it's a beautiful sunny day in Sydney. That's the problem. People just want to stay in the sunshine instead of get out there and do stuff.
Which leads us to the last question that we have for you today, which is, I must admit, I build this up every time we have a podcast because it is the final question.
Ooh, did I get a drum roll?
A drum roll, if you like.
Oh, I don't know how to do a drum roll.
We do often do a little finger drum roll. Yeah.
Yes. So, big question. Think about it.
Yeah.
Really take your time.
Okay.
If there was one piece of art, one poem that really summarised your life, what would it be and why?
Ooh. Okay. Okay, so there's probably several different options I could go, particularly because different poems and different artworks. But there's this one artwork that I've done recently for a project. It was Grab a Bestie and Do a Goodie. So basically, it's just grabbing a best friend and doing a good deed for someone.
Yep.
And then putting it on YouTube. So it's like spreading good deeds around the world.
Yeah.
And hashtag I'm a goodie. And I actually got the poster there. And it's a picture of a really old grandma sticking her tongue out.
Yes.
And being like, yeah, like. And the whole premise behind it was, when was the last time you hung out with Nan? The reason why I would pick that artwork to kind of sum up everything about me is because that's me. I'm that old grandma sticking my tongue out, having a hoot. Like, I want to be able to look back and I know that my life has been incredible. My youth goes on for eternity. I don't feel like I'm aging at all. So that artwork in itself, and the fact that it encourages people to like go hang out with your grandma as well, which is kind of what I'm all about, and you know, look at other people in the community that might need your help. So that artwork is definitely what sums me up perfectly.
Great answer.
Thank you so much for sitting down with us today, Bethany.
Thank you.
I'm definitely excited about getting out there and doing stuff. It's funny, I actually, on the podcast last month, Nick, do you remember how we talked about doing something inspiring in the morning to sort of set how the rest of the day will be? I know we little bit of a late start on our podcast record today, but I kind of feel like this has been so inspiring. It's sort of set how the rest of my day will be.
Oh, that's so lovely.
And I'm sure beyond that. So thank you so much.
It's so funny because, you know, from when I first met you, I found you so inspiring. Like, you're literally the reason that my art has taken a whole nother sort of avenue or pathway now. So it's just so funny. I get really funny how, like, if my story inspires people, because I just feel like, you know, I'm just living. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
and it's really strange. It's, but...
Fantastic.
Yeah. So my appreciation extends to you.
Yeah.
It really does. And this has been amazing. Thank you for this. It's been fun.
You both inspire me. Thank you very much. See you all later.
You too.
It's been
Nicholas
great. Thanks, guys.
Wow, what an amazing interview.
What an energy. What a positive energy too.
I'm even going to overlook the fact that you guys made me watch you eat homemade avocado ice cream and strawberries in the sunshine.
Amazing, by the way, just I think that even put another level on how brilliant that podcast was. Just enjoying the homemade ice cream afterwards.
So, out of the millions of wonderful things that Bethany just mentioned to us, what were your takeaways?
Well, I had one very clear one, and I think it goes through all of Bethany's work, this idea of empowering others. It's a really beautiful thought, and this idea that, you know, empowering others actually gives you more power and more stamina to do what you want to do. And it's not just about, I guess, fulfilling yourself in your own quests, but making sure that you help people along the way. And that in itself helps you fulfill your goals in life. I really love that thought, and I think it's at the heart of this particular podcast, but it's really lovely to hear it from an artist like that who's doing it constantly.
Yeah, and there's such a underlying stream of selflessness and goodness in everything she seems to do that is just remarkable and wonderful.
Yeah, and you can see it in her personality too, of how fantastically fulfilling that is for her.
Yeah, and that idea at the end when she said, My youth goes on for an eternity.
Yes.
I was making all these notes of things she said that I was like, oh, that's good. Oh, that's good. But just that idea, and it's kind of similar of this, I think it comes from the same place, the same well of goodness that wants to give to other people, this idea of replenishing yourself as well.
Yeah.
There seems to be a certain amount of beauty in the way she views everything. The idea that everything's led by colour. Mm. And also when she mentioned that she sees everyone as an artwork.
Yeah. And I think it so flows through from her work. If you have a look at that beautiful image that she spoke about have you seen your nan, you know, go and see your nan today.
Yeah.
I don't know the exact wording of it, but it's such a beautiful image and you can just see her radiating through it. It's really lovely.
And that our whole lives are beautiful.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just
how you look at it.
It's just our perspective.
Perspective, exactly. Yeah.
So, Nick, any recommendations for this month?
I've got a couple of recommendations for you, Lauren Bailey. One, well, both of them actually are related to our lovely podcast guest, Bethany Smith. I thought I'd take two of her, I guess, disciplines and see what's out there for people to go and check out. The first one that I'm going to recommend is the Australian Poetry Slam, which I would love to get along to, and I might just, which is, it's got the national finals, which is happening just after our next podcast, actually, at 11th of October, but there's a heap of regional finals happening around the country. Poetry Slam, like, I have to go and check this out. Like, I love the idea. Number one, poetry's great, but the fact that they call them poetry slams, just, I love the idea of it. Have you ever been to a poetry slam, Lauren?
I have actually been to a poetry slam. But yeah, I do like that idea of slam. It's like the rawness and intensity and the emotion and all of
totally.
That. That's how I read it, at least.
Well, I take it as like poetry is such a beautiful word. And then slam is like, it's so beautiful, but then it's like, got action, you know, poetry slam. Anyway, did I mention that it's happening at the Sydney Opera House too, the drama theatre? So that'll be the Australian final, which is the 11th of October.
Great.
And as a nice little tie-in, it's also a part of, it's happening on the last day of the Word Travels Story Festival. How great's that? Word Travels Story Festival. Go check it out. It's www.wordtravels.info. For a little bit more information on that storytelling festival. How great's that?
That is great.
The second recommendation that I want to give you is the Archibald Prize exhibitions happening, from a visual perspective, is happening until the 27th of September. So it's only $15. So if you're anywhere near the Art Gallery of New South Wales, which is in the Domain in Sydney, go along and check it out. And of course, if you don't know, I guess most people would, but the Archibald Prize was first awarded in 1921, and it's Australia's favourite art award, and it's one of the most prestigious. So there's the Archibald Prize awarded to the best portrait painting, which is there to have a look at, and the winner plus all the other entries. But there's also the Wynne Prize, which is the best landscape painting, as well as the Sulman Prize, which is for the best subject painting or genre painting. So go along and check them out. So there's a few of my recommendations, Lauren. What about you? Have you got anything for the listeners this month?
Well, I just have one recommendation this month.
Yes.
And it's a little bit, I guess you could say, off topic in terms of storytelling, but on topic for me, for my life, for my worldview. And I think you'll like it.
Try me out.
It's a website called beanunfucker.com.
Okay.
Tell me more. And it poses the question, so how fucked are we? And goes on to say, we're pretty fucked, but we're optimistic. We've made a mess of this planet and we need to stop thinking it's not our problem, that it's up for debate or it's just too hard to fix.
Oh, fantastic.
And it really is this, it's a simply but effectively designed website. It has a list of head-slappingly easy things everyone can do to start unfucking things.
Oh,
and it goes through and it lists something and I'll say, you know, we fucked this up and it'll list the thing. And here's one thing you can do, like that hole the next time you go to the supermarket, take a green bag. But for all sorts of areas of your life. And it really makes you, it empowers you. You know, there are so many easy things we can do to have a positive impact. And it basically just says, look, you want to help unfuck things? Let's have a go. I'm a big fan. So that is my recommendation.
I love that view on things as well. I love the, there's a bit of a tongue-in-cheek vibe to that. And I like the idea of taking away the bullshit and just going, hey, let's unfuck things. I really love that concept. So I will check out that site. What was it again?
It's called beanunfucker.com.
Great.
And can I just say the other thing I really like about it is, depending on how, if I read it really quickly, this is wrong. It just looks like beanfucker.com.
Which is a completely different website, I'm sure.
And, got a fetish probably, for beans.
Yeah. Probably not allowed on your web browser at all, that one. Fantastic. Hey, oh, as well, we should mention, Lauren, that obviously the Melbourne Fringe is coming around.
Oh, it's just
too,
around the corner. I picked up a program today. Very exciting.
Yeah, so we've got No Punchline, which is Anne Truong's circus-inspired piece, and also Bodies Over Bitumen, which, of course, is the lovely Sky Gelman's work that we spoke about in podcast 16.
And our very first podcast guest, Adam Cass.
Yes.
Wrote a piece that I believe is being performed at Fringe this year, and I'm talking really slowly because I'm trying to find the name. I should know the name. I can't find the name. We'll just post it. We'll post a link. We'll post a hyperlink that still doesn't tell you the name. No, we will tell you the name. Adam has a play on. Please say something. Cover me.
I'm trying to figure out how I save you from that.
Oh, it's called Bock Kills Her Father.
Bock Kills Her Father.
Yeah, there you go.
Fantastic.
Thank Adam you, Google. Cass.
That's right.
Moving on.
What about your month, Lauren? Have you got something for us? What are you doing this month?
Well, I mentioned in the intro to the podcast today, I'm very much focused in the next few weeks on producing, directing and acting in a short film at the end of the month, which is really amazing and exciting.
Yeah, really exciting. And massive learning curve, Lauren, for you as well.
Yeah. To begin with, I got a little bit overwhelmed sort of in pre-production, but things are starting to move along now and I'm getting increasingly excited. So
yeah,
I think
it'll
be good.
Rolling around very quickly.
And it'll just be so nice. You know, I've been in so many short films over the years. It'll be nice to really see something from beginning to end and learn about how all that works. So
yeah.
What about you, lovely? What are you up to?
Well, I started to cover it a little bit at the start of the podcast, just in regards to my next month being a bit of an exploration phase of my life, where I went through some pretty significant changes moving to Sydney. And I wanted to quote Chris Hadfield. He's a Canadian astronaut, actually, and you might have known him. He was he's been to space a few times, but he also has a wonderful clip where he did a cover of Space Odyssey by David Bowie when he was in the space station.
Oh, well, I have to post that. You want to check it out?
Yeah, totally. It's actually a really lovely clip. One of those thought-provoking clips on life. But one of his famous quotes is this idea of humans are pre-programmed to explore, right? Like before we know how to talk, we know how to crawl, we know how to check out our environment. And he takes it from the idea of that we go to space and we try to explore as far as we can so that it gives us perspective on our world. And I just really love that idea that he sort of puts it in the way of we explore, we find things, and we take time to then process those things. And I think that's just a lovely thought. With my month coming ahead, and I think I spoke about it last month in regards to just taking time to not do much, you know. Go and see new spaces. Yes, I'm going to go up to Byron Bay and relax, but
that's
to
like
really
going
take the time.
The moon.
Yeah, well, in times, yeah, totally. Main street after midnight. It's a bit like going to the moon. but just taking the time to, I guess, not be cluttered with the
day-to-day
the day-to-day hassles, and just to allow yourself to sit back. And I always take that idea of Chris sitting back in the space station looking down at Earth and how he spoke about this sense of clarity because he just, you know, was able to step out and look back at what was his life. So, I mean, that's a pretty fanciful analogy, but I'm sure you get the idea of what I'm trying to do.
No, I love it. I think it's great. Yeah.
So that'll be my month. So I think that's a lovely time to also end the podcast, to take a moment to step out of the podcast,
to get some reflect clarity on the podcast. And we will see you all in October. We hope loads of exciting things happen until then. In the meantime, you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, SoundCloud, About Me.
All of those.
The website.
And just, you know what, just take the time to connect with us too. If you've got anything that you want to mention about the podcast, you can take the survey. It could be just, you know, how much you enjoy Lauren's voice. I don't know. It could be just that. But just, we love hearing from the community, so get in touch.
Thanks for listening.